Welcome back to the Deep Dive. We've got the June 2025 Premium Edition of the NZ Incident Response Bulletin right here.
That's the one. It's their regular summary, pulls together key forensic and cybersecurity news, trends, that sort of thing.
Exactly. And what we want to do today is, well, unpack it for you, cut through the noise, pull out the really important insights.
Yeah, the idea is to help you stay informed without, you know, drowning in all the detail.
We'll guide you through it, highlight what matters, maybe add a bit of context.
Let's do it.
Okay, so let's jump into the bulletin's news section, starting right here in New Zealand. And wow, the first headline, it really hits home. Cyber attacks costing Kiwis an estimated $1.6 billion in 2024.
It's a huge figure, isn't it? That's from the NCSC, the National Cybersecurity Center. Their report for the second half of last year showed 54% of adults here were affected by some kind of cyber threat.
54%? That's more than half the adult population.
Yeah.
And it wasn't just, like, annoying pop-ups. The bulletin says around 830,000 people actually lost money.
Mm. And the average, $12,260 per incident.
Wow.
And what's really concerning, the bullet point points out this $1.6 billion figure is probably low.
Right, because of underreporting.
Exactly. They found 44% of victims just didn't report it. Maybe embarrassment or, you know, not sure who to tell. So the real cost could be quite a bit higher.
So given how widespread this is, what did the NCSC say people should actually do? Any key advice?
Well, they're really hammering home the basics, the proactive stuff. You know, two-factor authentication, 2FA, that extra login step.
Right. Yeah.
And using password managers. Get those complex, unique passwords for everything. It sounds simple, but they really do make a difference. Fundamental stuff.
Okay. Still in NZ, the bulletin then talks about government funding, specifically for the intelligence agencies, GCSB and NZSIS, after budget 2025.
Yeah, this part's quite interesting, especially when you look at the bigger picture. The bulletin reports funding reductions.
Reductions? How much?
Well, the GCSB is down to $267 million, which is about a 20% drop, roughly. And the NZSIS goes from $117 million down to $111 million.
Hmm. And the bulletin puts this against, like, a backdrop of increasing threats, right? Cyber attacks, foreign interference, all that.
Exactly. Rising national security threats, cyber, espionage, extremism, instability in the region, global tensions.
So why the cuts, then? Did the government explain?
The official line, according to the bulletin, is that it's mainly because a big capital project is finished up.
Mm.
They're saying it's not a reflection of changing priorities.
Okay.
And the agencies themselves put out statements saying they're still sufficiently resourced to do their jobs.
But the bulletin adds some interesting context about our Five Eyes partners.
It does. It notes that Australia, the UK, Canada, they're apparently increasing their intelligence budgets. The US is seeing some cuts too, so it's not uniform, but yeah.
So New Zealand's going one way while some key allies are going another.
Kind of. The bulletin just lays out the facts. It doesn't draw a conclusion, but it definitely makes you wonder, you know, is our situation unique enough for this approach? Or is it a strategic difference? Food for thought.
Okay. Moving on, still with things affecting people here, the Privacy Commissioner's annual survey results were covered.
Right. And no big surprise here, privacy concerns are running really high.
What are people most worried about?
The survey highlights kids' privacy online, how social media uses our data, and increasingly AI being used for making decisions about us.
And it's getting worse. People are more worried now.
Seems so. Nearly half said their concern has grown recently. And over 80% want more control over their personal info.
So what's the takeaway for businesses, according to the bulletin?
Well, the bulletin links this public feeling directly to organizations. It's basically saying, look, people are worried, so you absolutely need transparent data practices.
Tell people what you're doing with their data.
Exactly. And practice data minimization. Only collect and keep what you really need. It's fundamental for trust.
That focus on data and trust is a good segue, actually. Let's shift over the Tasman and look at the Australian news in the bulletin. There's a pretty significant new rule for companies there.
Yes. New cybersecurity regulations. If your company has over $3 million AUD turnover, or you're in critical infrastructure, you now have to report any ransom payments you make.
Report them? To who and how quickly?
To the government, through a specific portal, and get this, within 3 days.
3 days? Wow, that's fast. Puts a lot of pressure on the board, doesn't it?
Huge pressure. Suddenly, paying a ransom isn't just an internal decision. It's potentially public, definitely visible to the government.
So the idea is government gets a better view of the ransomware problem.
That seems to be the main goal, yeah. Better national visibility. But for the companies, it really complicates things. Makes having a solid, board-involved incident response plan absolutely critical. You need to be ready for that reporting deadline.
Okay. The bulletin also mentions an incident involving staff at Australia's big banks.
Yeah. Nearly 100 staff logins from employees at the big four Commonwealth Bank, ANZ, NAB, Westpac, were apparently stolen.
Stolen how?
Using InfoStealer malware. It's nasty stuff. Sits on a device and just quietly scoops up credentials, passwords, that kind of thing.
So this wasn't like a breach of the bank's main systems, more like individual employees' computers.
That's the understanding from the bulletin, yes. Compromise at the endpoint, maybe personal devices or less secure connections, but the impact is serious. Those stolen logins were apparently shared online.
Which opens the door for more attacks, right? Data breaches, maybe ransomware using those credentials.
Precisely. It just shows, even with strong bank security, the human element, employee devices, awareness, it's all part of the chain. Need strong protocols everywhere.
Okay. And one more from Australia, New South Wales, is bringing in new laws against cyber fraud.
That's right. Cybercrime fraud apparently cost Australians $2 billion last year.
Yeah.
So NSW is acting. The bulletin mentions the Identity Protection and Recovery Bill.
And what does that actually do?
A couple of the key things. It proposes a fraud check service and something called a compromised credential register.
So like a blacklist for stolen IDs?
Sort of. It lets government agencies and some approved businesses check if an ID document, like a passport number or driver's license number someone's trying to use, has been reported as compromised or stolen.
So it makes it harder for criminals to use stolen IDs for things like opening accounts or getting loans?
That's the goal. Make the stolen data less useful. The bill also formally sets up ID Support NSW to help victims. It's a proactive step against identity fraud.
All right, let's broaden the view now to the global cyber news covered in the bulletin. There was a major item related to the conflict in Ukraine.
Yes, Western intelligence agencies made quite a significant accusation against Russia, specifically the GRU Unit 26165. You might know them as Fancy Bear or APT-28.
Okay, what are they accused of?
Targeting the logistics systems that are delivering aid into Ukraine. Basically trying to spy on and potentially disrupt the flow of supplies.
How did they supposedly do that?
According to the bulletin summary of the claims, it was pretty sophisticated. They allegedly compromised over 10,000 internet-connected cameras.
10,000?
Yeah. Cameras at places like border crossings, transport hubs, in Ukraine itself, but also in neighboring countries like Poland, Romania, Hungary, Slovakia, giving them real-time eyes on aid movements.
Wow, that's quite the surveillance network.
It is. And besides the cameras, the agencies also said APT-28 used targeted spear phishing emails and even voice phishing, deceptive phone calls.
To trick people inside aid organizations.
Exactly. To infiltrate their systems and steal sensitive logistics, data shipping manifests, schedules, routes. The aim, according to the accusations reported in the bulletin, was to find ways to hinder or stop the aid getting through. The bulletin just reports what the agencies alleged.
Okay, shifting focus. Over in the U.S., there was an investigation mentioned about someone impersonating a very high-profile figure.
That's right, the White House Chief of Staff, Susie Wiles. The bulletin summarizes a report saying her personal cell phone contacts were compromised.
Her personal phone, not official channels.
Correct. And someone then used that access to send fraudulent messages, pretending to be her, to other influential people, senators, governors, business leaders.
That's serious.
Very. It really highlights the risk, even for top officials outside their secure government systems. The FBI apparently views threats like this against presidential staff very seriously. It's a reminder about secure comms, even on personal devices. The bulletin notes this isn't the first White House security incident they flagged.
Okay, another international incident. The Czech Republic pointing the finger at China.
Yes, the Czech government accused a Chinese state-sponsored group, known as APT-31, of attacking the foreign ministry's unclassified network.
And they went public with this.
Very public. The Czech foreign minister condemned it, reportedly summoned the Chinese ambassador. NATO also weighed in, saying the attack caused damage and disruption. Both NATO and the EU condemned it as violating international norms. The bulletin presents this as fitting a pattern of previous accusations against groups like APT-31 and APT-40.
And it mentions Prague's stance on Taiwan possibly being relevant.
It has that context, yes. Suggesting that Prague's relatively pro-Taiwan position might be a factor in the diplomatic friction. The bulletin also notes Beijing hasn't commented on this specific case, but generally denies such hacking allegations.
Okay. And briefly, one more global item, a disclosure from ConnectWise. They make Screen Connect, the remote access tool.
Yeah, ConnectWise announced they believe they were hit by a sophisticated nation-state actor. The attack apparently affected a, quote, small number of their Screen Connect customers.
Did they say who or when?
No, the bulletin notes, those details weren't released publicly. Not the exact number affected, the timing, or who they think the actor was. They did bring in Google Mandiant to investigate and notified the affected customers.
Just another reminder that even the tool providers are targets.
Absolutely. Prime targets, often.
The bulletin also lists some recent cyber alerts and news clips, just brief mentions.
Yeah, quick hits on various topics, things like implementing SIEM and SOAR tools, you know, for security monitoring and automation.
Right.
Best practices for AI data security, which we'll get into more detail on, and also stuff on mitigating threats to operational technology, OT, like industrial control systems.
Okay, and that mention of AI data security leads us perfectly into the next section, the Our Views part of the bulletin. This is where they do a deeper dive.
And the topic this month is really timely, preventing and managing accidental sensitive data leaks into generative AI.
This is a huge one for organizations right now, isn't it?
Absolutely. Everyone wants the productivity boost from tools like ChatGPT, but there's this massive risk. Employees just pasting things they shouldn't.
Like that famous example of engineers pasting confidential source code.
Exactly that kind of thing. That's the core problem the bulletin unpacks. And it outlines some key risks. First up, loss of confidentiality and potential privacy breaches.
Because the AI provider might store and use the data you feed it.
Precisely. When you put data into many public GenAI services, it's often stored. The NZ Privacy Commissioner has explicitly warned about this. The data could be kept, used for training the AI model.
So your confidential memo or customer list could end up teaching the AI and maybe even pop out in someone else's answer later.
That's the risk. You lose exclusive control. Once it's in that public tool, its confidentiality is gone. And if it's personal information under the NZ Privacy Act 2020, boom, that's potentially an unauthorized disclosure, a privacy breach.
Which leads to the second risk, data retention and training data exposure.
Yeah, it's related. By default, many providers use your input data to train their models. OpenAI, for instance, says they use ChatGPT queries for training, unless you're on specific enterprise plans and opt out.
So your data gets baked into the model.
Embedded. And studies show these models can sometimes spit out bits of their training data, including sensitive stuff. That Samsung source code leak is the classic case study engineers pasted code meeting notes, then realized it could be absorbed by the public model.
And even if it's not used for training, the provider can still see it, right?
Good point. The bulletin references the NCSC's view here. Those stored queries used for developing the large language models, they're almost certainly accessible to the provider's staff or contractors. And critically, those stored queries are themselves a target. They can be hacked or leaked.
Okay, risk number three, platform security and data breach risks. Basically, trusting the AI provider's security.
Exactly. You're relying on them to keep your data safe. If their platform gets compromised or they have a bug, your submitted data could be exposed.
Like that ChatGPT glitch a while back where people could see other users' chat titles?
That's the kind of thing. And again, that NCSC point is relevant. The stored data itself is a potential treasure trove for attackers if the provider gets breached.
And finally, regulatory and compliance implications. We touched on the Privacy Act.
Right. If you accidentally leak personal information to an unauthorized party, like a public AI tool, and it's likely to cause serious harm, you must notify. Under the NZ Privacy Act, you need to tell the Office of the Privacy Commissioner, the OPC, and the affected people as soon as practical.
And the OPC expects that pretty quickly.
Their guidance suggests within 72 hours of becoming aware is the expectation. You use their notify use tool.
Mm.
But it's not just privacy law. Think about NDAs, client contracts, industry regulations. Leaks could violate those too.
Okay, so the risks are clear. What if it happens? What does the bulletin say about responding to an accidental leak? It emphasizes treating it seriously.
Absolutely. First step, contain and halt, stop the bleeding. The person involved have to stop using that AI for sensitive stuff immediately.
Can you delete the data from the AI?
You can try deleting the prompt in the tool, if possible, but the bulletin warns this likely won't scrub it from the provider's back-end systems or training data. The organization might need to block access to that specific AI tool temporarily. Key is figuring out what leaked, who leaked it, and when, fast.
Okay, contain first, then preserve and assess.
Document everything. Which AI tool, what data exactly, timestamps, who was involved. You need a clear record for investigation. Then assess the damage. How sensitive was the data? Personal info? Trade secrets? IP? Who could be harmed by this?
And you need to think about how the AI might use it.
Yes. Consider the worst-case scenarios. Could this data reappear in AI outputs for others? Could competitors see it? Get your privacy officer involved right away.
Next step, engage legal and notify if needed.
Crucial. Bring in legal counsel early. They'll advise on your obligations, help manage communications. If it meets the threshold for a notifiable privacy breach under the Act, you've got that tight time frame, likely 72 hours, to notify the OPC via Notify Users.
And notify affected people, too.
Potentially, yes. Legal will guide that. They'll also advise on whether you need to tell partners, clients, maybe even the public. You can talk to the AI provider, but don't expect miracles in getting data removed. Focus on meeting your legal reporting duties.
What about internal stakeholders?
Inform stakeholders is the next step. Be transparent internally. You'll need resources to manage this. Maybe pause wider Gen AI use while investigating. It's also a chance to remind all staff about the rules. And for serious leaks, a proper root cause investigation is needed. Was it lack of awareness? Policy confusion? Then manage the fallout.
And after the dust settles, post-incident review.
Learn from it. Why did it happen? Was the policy unclear? Training inadequate? Use the findings to improve?
What?
Update policies, maybe add technical controls. Definitely revisit and update your incident response plan specifically for AI leaks. And test it.
Makes sense. Of course, preventing it in the first place is better. The bulletin spends a good chunk of time on preventative measures. Governance, policy, training, tech controls.
Yeah, prevention is key. Starts with clear policies and data classification. You need an acceptable use policy for AI, and it must be unambiguous.
Like, explicitly list what cannot go into public AI tools.
Exactly. List confidential data, restricted data, PII, intellectual property. Make it crystal clear. Maybe define specific teams or use cases that are allowed, perhaps with approved enterprise accounts only. And this policy must link back to your overall data classification scheme. That's your enforcement baseline.
But a policy isn't enough if people don't know about it, right? Staff training and awareness.
Non-negotiable. Regular mandatory training. Use real examples.
Yeah.
The Samsung case, hypothetical client data leaks make the risk real. Hammer home that queries in public AI are not private. Cover basic cyber hygiene too. The bulletin's mantra is, think before you paste.
Good, Marcha.
And foster a culture where people aren't terrified to report mistakes. Encourage blameless reporting of accidental leaks so you can contain them fast.
What about technical safeguards, technical controls, and monitoring?
Yes. Data loss prevention, DLP tools, or web filters can be configured to spot sensitive beta patterns being copied into web forms, like AI prompts. They can block it, or at least alert security teams.
So you can actually block pasting certain types of data?
Potentially, yes. Or restrict access to risky AI sites altogether. Encourage use of sanctioned, secure enterprise Gen AI solutions if you have them, the ones that promise data isolation and won't use your inputs for training.
And keep an eye on usage.
Monitoring is key. Use SIEM tools or CASB, Cloud Access Security Brokers, to watch for unusual Gen AI activity that might signal policy violations. Get alerts set up. And, again, have that tested incident response plan ready for AI scenarios.
Finally, the bulletin talks about governance and compliance. This sounds like senior management involvement.
Absolutely. Treat Gen AI adoption as high risk. Mm-hmm. It needs senior leadership buy-in. Conduct proper risk assessments, privacy impact assessments, PIAs for data risks, maybe algorithmic impact assessments, AIAs too.
Align with standards.
Yeah. Look at frameworks like the NIST AI Risk Management Framework or ISO standards on AI management. Ensure you're complying with the Privacy Act and any industry rules. Do due diligence on any AI vendors. And make AI oversight part of your regular risk governance. Report to the board on it.
So wrapping up the Our Views section, what's the bulletin's final word on these Gen AI leaks?
It sums it up as a mix of old-fashioned human error amplified by powerful new technology. The stakes are really high for organizations.
And the responsibility lies with the organization.
Clearly. The bulletin stresses that preventing and managing these leaks has to be core to your cyber and privacy strategy. Organizations have a duty, it says, to put prudent controls in place. Policy, training, tech, so that innovation doesn't get ahead of governance.
Innovation needs guardrails.
Basically, yes. Don't let the tech outrun your ability to manage the risk.
Okay. Yeah. The bulletin also includes the standard about the bulletin info and a disclaimer, right?
Standard stuff. Monthly summary for execs and the usual disclaimer. It's general guidance, not specific legal or business advice for your exact situation. Always get tailored advice. no liability accepted, etc.
Right. So this deep dive into the June 2025 bulletin, wow, we've covered a lot. From the massive costs of cybercrime hitting everyday Kiwis to debates over national intelligence funding amid rising global threats.
Mm-hmm. Then across to Australia with new reporting rules and attacks targeting bank staff logins.
Then global espionage targeting Ukraine aid, impersonating White House staff, accusations between the Czech Republic and China.
And finally, that really detailed look at the challenge every organization is facing now, keeping sensitive data out of generative AI.
It really paints a picture of a complex, fast-moving threat landscape affecting individuals, companies, nations.
Definitely. The risks are evolving constantly.
So here's something to think about, drawing from everything we've discussed from the bulletin. It highlights these significant financial costs hitting individuals, right? But also these complex national security threats playing out globally, and then throws in the new privacy challenges from tech like AI. Given all that, what does this evolving landscape really tell us about the increasing personal responsibility, you know, the responsibility on each of us to actually stay informed and protected in this digital age? How much more onus is falling on the individual now?